Well, one researcher says there is a direct connection between the issues of violence and safety that have enraged women and sent them onto the streets today and how a country performs on gender equity more generally. And where Australia was once lauded for firsts in gender issues, the first country to adopt a Sex Discrimination Act, the first to outlaw sexual harassment at work, on multiple indices on gender equity, more recently, Australia's performance has fallen off a cliff. And that's despite being very highly ranked by the UN on human development without accounting for gender. Emma Dawson is the CEO of Per Capita. I asked her why Australia's performance on lifting women has slumped.
We looked in our report at Per Capita at a number of those indices, particularly the UN Gender Development Index and the World Economic Forum Gender Gap Index. And we have dropped very badly on both those indices over the last 6 or 7 years in particular. So if you look at our position in the Gender Development Index at the UN, we've dropped 40 places since 2013 from one of the world's leading countries in terms of gender development, and in fact a nation that was commended by the UN in 2009 for its efforts to measure and track gender equality, to 42nd now. We're still amongst OECD countries, so we're ahead of a lot of developing nations, but we're in the lower end of comparable OECD nations now. And on the World Economic Forum Gender Gap Index, again, we've dropped 20 places from 24th to 44th since 2013. And one of the really disturbing things is when you look at the UN GDI, the Gender Development Index, we still perform very well overall, when that data isn't disaggregated by gender. So when we're looking at human development, we're sixth in the world, but we drop right down when it comes to women's development. So actually what that's showing is that Australian men continue to benefit from living in a wealthy, stable country like Australia, but Australian women aren't sharing those benefits nearly as much.
So what's happened? Because, I mean, as you say, Australia had such a good reputation. We were a real leader. I mean, from the days of the suffragettes through the feminist movement of the 60s, the 70s, 80s even. What's happened?
There's been a real drop in political leadership in this area, frankly, and it's been particularly notable over the last few years. But, you know, yeah, you're quite right. When we were the first country in the world to have a Sex Discrimination Act, we were the first country in the world to make it illegal for workplace sexual harassment, and the great late Susan Ryan drove a lot of those changes in the 70s and 80s. But particularly since the, you know, 2013, thereabouts, a little bit after, we have seen a lot of the machinery of government that was in place to track and measure and drive gender equality dismantled. And that actually goes back further than that. So we stopped funding the time use survey, for example, in 2006, which was an annual survey done by the Australian Bureau of Statistics to understand how men and women used their time. And that allowed us to see that women were, for example, doing about 80% more unpaid domestic work than men. These are really important research tools to understand where disadvantage and discrimination and how it plays out. But we also have fallen down badly because of the lack of political representation. So one of the things that is measured is political leadership. So a decade ago, we had both a female prime minister and a female governor general. So we were scoring much better on political leadership, which is one of the key things that they measure. But of course, we don't have that now, and we still have a fairly low female representation in our parliament compared to comparable countries. We also have a persistent gender pay gap, and while the headline gender pay gap is around 14%, one of the problems we have in Australia is a much higher prevalence of part-time and casual work for women, much higher than most, again, comparable OECD nations. And that means that when you take into account women's interrupted careers, their job insecurity, and they're much more likely to work part-time. They make up almost 70% of part-time workers in Australia. Then the gender pay gap over the life course blows out to about 31.5%. So that's in lifetime earnings. So there are a lot of cultural factors and there are a lot of political factors. And one thing that we don't do well in Australia anymore is engage with this stuff at a political level, at a federal political level, and really measure and track the progress that we need to continue to make to to close the gender gap in a number of areas: pay, representation, leadership, opportunity, and even the only things that women do lead in educational outcomes and life expectancy. But the news for older women is very poor, because they may live longer, but they are much more likely to live in poverty.
The veteran feminist Eva Cox said today that Australia has to get serious about what a good society looks like. And she talked about, you know, valuing women's contributions as much as men's. But she was really making the point that if the conversation nationally is all about economics and jobs and not about a lot of the other things that women tend to do, then you're not going to solve this issue. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with Eva on this. I think that one of the issues, and it's not unique to Australia, is that our economic system doesn't value women's work, whether paid or unpaid. When the GDP, gross domestic product, was invented about 80, 90 years ago now to measure economic progress, there was a deliberate decision made by the men that set that up to exclude domestic labour. And so we know that unpaid domestic work is valued at about roughly half of GDP, but it's not counted in terms of things that contribute to our society. What's happened as more women have moved into the workforce is a lot of that domestic labour is now done by paid people. It's done in the labour force, so whether that be aged care or early childhood education and care or care for people with disabilities, but it's still undervalued because it's seen as women's work and it has its roots in the domestic sphere. So it's low paid and it's very poorly provided for. So we don't, for example, invest nearly enough. By global standards, we're well behind in our investment in aged care. We're well behind in our investment in early childhood care. And so this is all to do with the devaluing of what's seen as women's work. And Eva's right that, you know, when we want to think about a good society and what makes for a good life, we need to value much more than just the things that make money and that turn over money. Because a lot of the things that are actually most important to us as human beings, the time we spend with our families, the care we show for one another, and critically, the care we show for our environment, this also has an impact on our ecosystems and climate change, care is just not valued. And so those relationships that give meaning to our lives are not part of our national conversation about how we're succeeding as a country. So a lot of countries now are moving towards a kind of well-being budget framework where they actually measure well-being as a way of seeing, are we making progress as a nation? And I think Jacinda Ardern said that economic success without improved living standards isn't success, it's failure. And so what we've seen over recent years is, you know, big uptick in economic growth. Before the recession brought on by coronavirus, 30 years of uninterrupted economic growth, but actually the living standards of ordinary people have been stagnant or going backwards, and that's even more so for single older women, people of colour, people that are otherwise marginalised by our society. So, yeah, we need to think differently about what makes a successful nation.
And the connection between all of that and the issues that are being directly spoken about at the March for Justice rallies today around sexual violence and misogyny and attitudes towards women, there is a direct connection between what we've been discussing and those things, you think?
Absolutely, there is, because women don't feel safe. And I think the stories that and the realising that a lot of men are shocked when they hear that almost every woman feels unsafe walking alone at night, that they can't fully participate in society because of this ever-present danger of violence and of oppression. And also, in their workplaces, they're not given the same opportunities to get ahead. Even if they're brilliant and dedicated and hardworking, they're much more likely to be the ones that take time out of the workforce when children are born and go back part-time and are then, you know, not considered for promotion. All of these measures around women's safety, women's ability to operate to their full potential in a workplace without fear of harassment or marginalisation or just feeling that they can't get ahead because they're not viewed in the same way that men are, they hold women back. They hold our society back because we've got 51% of the population that's just not being given the same opportunity to realise their full potential. And if we could give women the same opportunity as men without those barriers of fear for their safety, of their inability to balance their commitments at home, and ensure that they had every opportunity to do just as well in their chosen field and in the things they want to do with their lives as men do, the boost to us as a nation economically economically and socially is unlike anything else we could do. It's the biggest change we could make to bring real society-wide benefits.
Emma Dawson, thank you for speaking with us today.
Thanks, Linda.
Emma Dawson is the CEO of the progressive think tank Per Capita, and their report on these issues is called Measure for Measure, Gender Equality in Australia.